been done. It's downhill from here on. Moses said that I couldn't bear your problems alone, etc. So he said, I said to you, choose wise and understanding men from among your tribes, and I will make them heads over you. You choose them, I'll appoint them. Bottom up, top down. Then you recall in Acts 6, when they had a difficulty there in the early church and the widows were being neglected, and the apostles said, it's not fitting for us to leave the word of God and serve tables. Here's what you do. You pick out seven men with these qualifications. You choose them, and we'll set them over. You choose them, and we'll appoint them. So we have a bottom-up, top-down process. And right now, a letter has gone out to all of our 800 representatives and contact staff from Donald McGilchrist, inviting their comments as to the role, the requisites of the next president, and what names I might want to submit. And then the end of last 3 days, let's see, 25th, I think, of February, we have what's called an annual Navigator Council that meets. This year there'll be 25 of our leaders from around the world that will gather. And the first item on the agenda, of course, will be the selection of the next president. So we'll lead them through a process until we have a consensus to who they feel is God's man for the job. Then on the 1st and 2nd of March, the board of directors will come in, get a briefing on what has transpired, the name of the person that's being recommended, spend the evening, they will, with that person interviewing. The next morning on Sunday, they'll meet to vote and ratify that selection. And if all goes well, white puffs of smoke will emerge from the castle. If the smoke is black, then the Nav Council goes back to work again, and that goes until there's an agreement on who God's man is. And it's very, very important that he be acceptable to the staff. More important than that he be acceptable to me or even the board, though we want it both ways. That way he'll be backed by the staff and the board of directors as well. For us to go outside the Navigators is unthinkable, and we feel that there are a number of men who are well qualified, and we're just looking to the Lord as to who he would choose. My wife tells me that it's interesting, some of the comments at the table, what I might be doing. You've got some great ideas, but they aren't in my plans. First, I'm going to do whatever Lucy needs done around the house. One of our first jobs is try to clean, lessen the number of things that are in the crawl space. But for that, I've got an assistant who's skinny, who can get under there. It's a crouching type thing. But I like to take more time for my personal disciplines, more time in Bible study and prayer, and even exercise. You know, I used to be able to do 3 miles a little faster. It's 45 minutes now. So it just takes longer to do everything. Also, we have quite a family in the ministry to the extended family. And Chuck has certainly opened my eyes to more that I can do and should do relative to the grandchildren. Then, relative to the Navigators, this is sort of an anomaly. I have been chairman of the board as well these years, and I'm still retaining that hat. So one of my responsibilities would be to help the board of directors fulfill its functions. Then I hope to be an active resource to the new president and his team. And to do that, and another thing I'll mention, I need to keep well informed on the progress of the Navigator Ministry worldwide. And I hope to continue and perhaps increase to some degree the ministry to and with the staff. For instance, twice this year I'll be helping them in some projects in Canada. I'll be in Asia for 6 weeks this fall, following spring, 6 weeks in Africa, etc. Then I will also continue in some fundraising responsibilities. Like others, I'll be responsible for my personal support, but also helping in these major projects that we referred to yesterday morning of the capital improvement type. The larger major donors, if I do come to you with dollar signs in my eyes, don't take out your checkbook, talk to your wife and to your tax accountant, because we'll be talking big money. Lucy said, don't get too deeply involved in fundraising. NAV Press brought over to me, week before last, installed in my office, a computer with a WordStar program that I've got to learn. I can type. Another forceful reminder that I have promised to write a couple books, that there are a couple things I think I could say that might be helpful. So I learned to use that machine and to write a couple books. By the way, I should stop. I think that there's one person who's not been mentioned that really deserves a Medal of Honor. My secretary, Millie Hopkins, who's been my secretary for 38 years. Now that deserves some kind of a special medal, don't you think so? Millie is going to go on limited assignment, and when our new secretary arrives, who'll be raising her support now, Millie will become my executive assistant, working 15 hours a week. We'll train this new girl, and also wants to give some of her time to recruiting secretaries. We're always in desperate need of good secretaries in the Navigators. Oh, yes, there's one more thing I have to tell you on that little list. Before I can get to all that fishing and laying on the beach that some of you suggested, after these helpful thoughts, I am going to give some rethinking to these priorities here. Terry Taylor and his team, the U.S. leadership team, have asked me to prayerfully consider spearheading our Navigator ministry to business and professional people. Now, this is not a new ministry, as evidenced by the President's Conference itself, by ministries that we have in various parts of the country. I think one notable ministry, such as Jim Morris and his compatriots in Kansas, and we're happy to have Jim here with us at this conference. But to start where we are and to build a network on the 2,000-year strategy that Terry referred to yesterday morning from Acts 1:8, from Jerusalem, Judea, all Samaria, and the uttermost part of the earth. I first learned it and heard it from Ford Madison, that he thought every Christian layman, among other things, such as a walk with God, a ministry to the non-Christian, and a discipling ministry, should have a bifocal vision. The whole world beginning where they live. And so the networking, and I have to admit, I'm still, this is in the prayer stage. You know, you have to, there's a terrific opportunity. I'm so excited about it that I'm giving it more thought than I should be right at the moment. Because I have some other things I haven't finished yet. And I'd like to leave this job going that way and not sliding in like the home base, you know, kind of slowing down. But I can envision a infrastructure of that network, a growing number of staff and non-staff facilitators. Well, that's just a little something that they've asked me to consider and pray. That would mean a little more personal staff and some field staff. And one of the things it would have to do would have to be consistent with our calling. And that means it would have to be an equipping ministry. And you recall, it's pointed out in Ephesians 4, 11 and 12, that God gave some to the body to be prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, etc., apostles, to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. Now, I believe that that's what God has called me to, and those who work with me. We believe that God has called us to equip the saints. And to equip business and professional people, the saints, not for our ministry, but for their ministry, their works of service, whatever that might be, whether it's in the family, in your affinity group, through the church, the PTA, or whatever your world might be, to help people to be effective for Christ in that world. And the reason for that is Matthew 9, where Jesus had gone about preaching and teaching. And when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And then you recall he said, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. The problem is not with the harvest, it's with the laborers. And so we beat a certain drum, we play the same tune, it's laborers, laborers, laborers. So we equip people to labor for Christ. Now, what is a laborer? I am always looking for different ways to explain simply what a laborer is. And let me ask you, have you ever heard of an isbidoo? Well, I hope not, because it occurred to me in the middle of the night, last night. I think it's my idea, and I thought it was a bad dream, or I heard it from you. But is, be, do. A laborer is something. A laborer must be something. And a laborer must do something. Now, a laborer is, and this is not a sermon, this is an explanation. Somebody didn't quite believe that out here up front. Romans 5:1, just listen to it. Therefore, having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, verse 2, through whom also we have access by faith into this grace in which we stand, and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. A laborer is someone who has peace for their past, grace for the present, and hope for the future. But a laborer must be something. Now, you knew I'd get back to this. A laborer must be full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, able to admonish. I think I've done this before, but I'm going to take Romans 15:14 as my year verse this year. And if you haven't chosen one yet, you might consider that. That's what they do. Or is, be, and do. My is, be, do. I don't think I'm going to use that again now that I think about it. But it's all right for this morning. But what do they do? Well, 1 Thessalonians 2:8, a laborer loves people, shares the gospel, shares their life. Now, in my 2-3 minutes left, I want to drop the other shoe. See, now we've invited us all here. Is there any possibility there's going to be a little hook somewhere? Well, now comes the hook. One of our staff, Noel Nelson, living in Atlanta, Georgia, had a businessman, rather fairly well-known Christian in the city, come to him and say, would you help me in my spiritual life? Well, Noel, who's a pretty active and busy fellow, gave him a very wise answer. He said, yes, I will, on one condition, that when I'm helping you, I can look around and see that you, in turn, are helping someone else. Now, if we, one of us, gets to your area, and we're in your home or in your office, we'd like to just look around and see somebody else that you, in turn, are reaching out to. That's what a laborer does. And that's what we want to see you become, as well as to be ourselves.